So, Philemon. It's only 25 verses. And what I want to do this morning is let's read those 25 verses. It is an emotional book. There's a great deal by Paul, where him just pouring out his heart, as well as the relationship that's being talked about in this book. And so I ask Alan, Carrie, and Russ in that order to read, and they have their assignments. So they're not going to get cued from me. They just know when their part starts, they're going to pick it right up and keep on going. So, Alan, whenever you're ready. Okay, so just as an overview of the book, it's obvious that Paul is the author of the book, and Timothy is named as the co-author. Why would it be important for Paul to have another person affiliated with this letter? Or any letter? Often we see when Paul writes, he will also say with Timothy or with someone else. Why would that be needful?
It's a proved fact.
Yes. The word I had in my mind was authenticate. It authenticates the document, right? You get a letter from Paul. What might you do if you had some concern over the validity? Well, you would go to someone else that named in it and said, do you know anything about this? Well, Timothy would be able to vouch for Paul in terms of his writing. Right. It not only proves the truth, it also proves the lies. Right? Just like Brian was talking about, when somebody would write something that may not be true, it was a false testimony. So Timothy is named and named for an important reason. So this is sent to Philemon, and Apaphia. Your guess is better than mine. I know in the English Standard Version, she is mentioned to be a sister. The name is a feminine name. Is that a sister to Philemon? Is that a sister in Christ? Is that Philemon's wife? I don't know. But she is nonetheless mentioned, as well as Archippus, named as a fellow soldier, as well as to the church that meets in Philemon's house. This is starting to make some of the evidence that we saw when we were studying Colossians, how the church that met in Colossae would meet in Philemon's house. And we referenced that several times when we were talking about Colossians. The subject of this book is Onesimus. And we're given some information at a high level that we'll get into the details here in just a minute. But this man was once trouble for Philemon. And that's why Paul's writing. Because Onesimus is now a changed man, and this letter is a personal appeal. Do you remember a phrase that was mentioned in the reading that tells us how personal this was? Who wrote the letter? Paul wrote it with his own hand. That wasn't always done. Sometimes Paul would sign the letter, and it would be stated that he signed the letter. But Paul often would dictate his letters, and someone else would actually scribe the letter for him. This was personal, and he wrote it with his own hand. So, here's kind of the way I want to tackle this. We've got three folks to kind of talk about: Philemon, Onesimus, and Paul. I want y'all to tell me, what do you know about Philemon?
Isn't that where I started?
Yeah, Philemon. Tell me characteristics of Philemon. Things that we observed in the reading of this chapter, of the letter. Master. Yeah. So what does that tell us about Philemon that a church met in his home? Yeah. How many people? I mean, we don't know how large the congregation was, but let's just say it was 25 people. Maybe it was more. What would it take for you to host the church in your home for worship service? Wouldn't that be some effort? You know, week after week after week. I think he was a generous man. I think he was a man who was worried about the work of Christ and provided a facility for that work to be furthered, right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I know, boy, you pitch that to me a little bit clearer, get it quicker. So what Brian's referencing is that when this work got established, it met on the front porch of Brother Jim's house. 67, 68? No, further back than that. The early 60s, wasn't it? Yeah, early 60s. Because this auditorium was built in 69. So, friend of Paul in the New King James, and in the Christian Standard Bible, they go on to translate it to say he was a dear friend. What else? Even if they weren't formally invited, they would have witnessed it. They would have been aware of the teaching that was going on.
It's implied by what's already been said that he's commended specifically for his faith, for his love, and the fact that he had refreshed the hearts of the saints.
And in verse 1, he's referred to as a fellow laborer to that end, to that point that you're making. Anything else, Russ? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in the letter to the Colossians, Onesimus is named as one of the ones that, you know, bringing back this letter. He was a man who prayed. Now, you know, it's one thing to say, well, he was a brother in Christ, but we learn that he was also a man who prayed. Let me just run down the rest of my list, and y'all feel free to add more. I'm not trying to close the conversation on it, but he was a fellow laborer of Paul. He opened his home for worship. He prayed for Paul. Paul specifically acknowledges how he prayed for Paul and was concerned for Paul. Brian mentioned this. He demonstrated his love and faith toward Jesus and all saints in verse 5. Saints were encouraged by him in verse 7. And in verse 16, we find out that he had servants. He had a bond servant at least because of the situation with Philemon. What else? I'm not suggesting there is anything else, but you might have something else.
Paul recognized or said that he knew that Philemon would receive Onesimus back, that he was confident in it, so I think we can say he was forgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paul wrote to him optimistically, with confidence, that Philemon would do what was needful. All right. So, tell me about Onesimus. Brother Jim.
One thing I wondered about the Jews had released their slave a certain period.
Mm-hmm. A man indebted to a Jewish man indebted to a Jewish man was bound to be released in the year of Jubilation. Well, and we talked about this when we studied Colossians, that there was a very large Gentile population, and there was also a significantly sized Jewish population in Colossae. I didn't do a word study on the names to understand if they were, were they traditionally considered Roman names or traditionally considered Jewish names. I can't speak to that. I think we can talk some about that phrase, though, that said, where he'll be yours forever, when we get a little bit further into it. Got some slides on that. We might have to talk after class. I'm not sure if we're going to get to my end of my slides, because that's my, you know, I always have slides that, if in case I've run out of time, I got something to fill in. Tell me about Onesimus.
He felt very indebted to Paul for bringing the gospel to him.
be somebody very different when he goes back to
it. He's going to be changed. And for the better.
Also, we've got to recognize that in the period of time that we're studying about, to be a slave, if you were disobedient or acted in a manner that's not becoming to the people that you answer to, there could be some serious punishment. And so, my observation is always trying to give an understanding that this guy doesn't.
Right. And there's a lot to be studied and figured out about the difference between what we think of slavery in this year versus what they thought of slavery in that year. We might have some time to talk about that a little bit. We are heavily persuaded by the 16th and 17th century when we think about slavery. At any rate, here's what I wrote down that Paul taught him while Paul was in prison. Onesimus somehow or the other made his way to Rome. We're not told how he found Paul, but he did. And I suspect, like Alan talked about, that while Philemon may not have sat in the house and heard any teaching, we're not told anything about that, he had to be aware of what Philemon was doing and having the church meeting his home every week. And in some way, that may have opened the door to give Paul the opportunity to teach him further and to bring Onesimus to obedience. It's clear that Paul is the one who was instrumental in that final steps that were necessary. Verse 10 talks about how Onesimus obeyed. At one time, he was apparently unprofitable for Philemon. Apparently so. I mean, if this man, this bondservant, fled, if he escaped, well he's unprofitable. If there was some debt owed that he was trying to work off, maybe. And now he's fled, well, then he's not fulfilling that obligation, right? And there's work that Philemon may need to be done. And so neither is he getting that work accomplished either because Philemon has fled. But verse 11 talks about how he's now changed. Paul says he's profitable to Paul. But Paul's going to send him back to Philemon in verse 12. What would Paul have rather done? Yeah, kept him there. And you can imagine, Paul in prison, in Rome, we know he was allowed certain liberties, but yet he still, as he describes himself, in chains. He can't leave. He can't just wander about. He's got Luke there. He's got Demas there. He's got assistants there. And he would like to have Onesimus there. Maybe that would free Luke up or free one of the other men up to go and do something they need to do. Maybe go see their family. There would have been opportunities had he been able to keep Onesimus. Why would he not keep Onesimus?
Well, there was a situation there that he recognized that he needed to be dealt with. Because Onesimus was bondservant to Philemon and he ran away from there. And so there was a situation that needed to be corrected, but corrected in the right way.
What he said? Yeah. There would have been left a gap, right, between the two had Paul not done this. Right?
Paul was never ever about doing what was just against him.
Yeah.
Connecting this with a letter we studied earlier, Philippians, we had Epaphroditus there. Epaphroditus was a tremendous help. But the folks back in Philippi were worried about him. They heard he was sick. Actually, he was sick almost. I'm going to send him back so that everybody feels better.
Yeah, that's a great example. It would have been a selfish act on Paul's side, right? To have kept Onesimus and just said, hey, don't worry about that. I'll write Philemon a letter and, I just tell them, you're staying with me. Well, that just would have been a selfless act. And what would have never been accomplished is any reconciliation between Philemon and Onesimus at all. I think we rightfully make the assumption that there was reconciliation. I don't know that the letter would have survived had there not been. But the confidence that Paul writes to Philemon that they will reconcile. And my last point there I wrote down was that he was a bondservant to Philemon in verse 16. So tell me about Paul's appeal. How did he go about it? What was his compelling reason? Did he order him?
Love their brother.
Demonstrate love. Right. I'm priming the pump here, guys. Did he order
him?
Exactly. Yeah. There's a responsibility in how this relationship needs to go forward. Bob?
As an apostle, Paul had the authority to compel
Paul would have been within the scope of his authority just to write Philemon and say, brother, Onesimus is coming back. You need to, bullet points. This is what you need to do. Why was it better for him to make the appeal in the way he did? Yeah, we're checking boxes now, right? So, could there have been any other... Oh, Brother Billy, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, let me interrupt you.
No, you're good.
On Joel's word bond, I think when we research that, we find out that the bond servant was this individual owed somebody something that had not been paid. And that was against the rules of the day.
Yes. And if they were Roman, this was a common practice. If they were Jewish, it was a common practice. The rules of how it would be dealt with in its whole may have been different, but it was still a common practice. So if Paul had written to Philemon and said, here's Onesimus, take him back, forgive him, Philemon could have taken the approach, well, I got to do this for Onesimus, but I don't have to do that for anybody else. Right? Because the command was, take Onesimus back. Forgive Onesimus. But instead, he makes an appeal concerning, put it this way, it was fitting. It was appropriate. And now, it's more universally applied. It's often the way we're taught. We're not taught the way we should live our lives necessarily by a list of checkboxes. You don't do this, you don't do this. Rather, often there's an appeal towards righteousness. There's an appeal towards things that are Christ-like, an appeal towards things that are fitting. And now we can make application of that across the board in different aspects of our lives. The Bible doesn't say anything about the internet, right? But it does have a lot to say about what is fitting and what is appropriate and what's righteous. Rather, Paul makes an appeal. He says, to do it for love's sake. Brother Jim talked about this in his observations about the appeal. Verse 9, yet for love's sake, I rather appeal to you, being such a one as Paul, the aged. Why does he mention his gray hair? if he had here.
Just, not necessarily is. I'm old, and I've done a lot, and I've seen a lot. And, I think that's has something to do with it.
Andy.
The word age might not necessarily have reference to the fact that he's elder. He is, it could, but as you look into that, it talks about him being, you look into the word, it talks about being an ambassador.
What we, how would we treat the elderly, the aged, the mature, as opposed to how we would treat youngsters running around and getting underneath their legs? That was the word I was looking for. I think it's respect. I think we owe Paul, Philemon would owe Paul, the respect of his experience that James was talking about. He can speak with an informative way over what needs to be done because of his experience, because of his maturity. What Andy was talking about, I didn't know that about there being some thought of being an ambassador. Paul's an ambassador for Christ, is who he is. And so the respect for his position would be what I think he's getting at in saying because of his age. And plus, he says in prison. Now also a prisoner of Jesus Christ. I'm not sure. I lean towards this being him being a representative of Christ, him being imprisoned because of his efforts for Christ, more so than you should do this for me because poor pitiful me, I'm locked up, I'm in jail. You see what I'm saying? But I still think it's out of concern or out of compassion. I've never liked, I'm the one that wrote it. I wrote sympathy up there, but I've never really liked the fact that that word's up there. I just knew that I needed to come up with some concept of the compassion that ought to be shown towards Paul in him making this request. I hope I haven't butchered that too bad. So he makes the appeal in a kind way, in a way that would promote Philemon to do what's the needful thing to be done, as opposed to somewhat roughshod, somewhat just demanding that something be done. Is there any lesson for us in how we deal with our brother in that type of thing? Yeah. In my work, I often have to go to someone and say, we need to do this differently. That the way you're approaching this is not the right approach. It's not the way we want it. I made the mistake of telling a guy from Kansas one time that we needed to lick this calf over again. So for the next 30 minutes, I had to explain what licking a calf over again meant. But isn't that the way we deal even with coworkers? Is that we would go to a coworker and we would want to talk them through a corrective action in some way that's appealing, But we also have a word in my industry, and it's called escalation. And it's, well, that didn't work. So what do I have to do? I have to escalate the issue. And so then I go to his boss, and I say, hey, I talked to Chuck, and we talked about this, that, and the other, but we're still fighting this issue. Could you help me? You know, and if that doesn't work, we just keep escalating. So, you know, maybe when we work with each other, let's not start at the escalation point, right? Let's start at the point that needs to be started at. If a brother sins against you, what are you supposed to do? Go tell the elders, right? You go to the brother. And I guarantee you, and this has never happened to me, but I've made my mind up a long time ago, this was going to be the first thing I ever asked. And I've never had to ask it. And I thank y'all for the way you handle it. Anybody ever came to me and said, well, that Chuck, let me tell you what he did to me. And my first thing is always going to be, have you talked to Chuck? Because I'm not going to get involved until I know that you've talked to Chuck. And then I need to go talk to Chuck and find out his side of the story. Paul always expected the best out of the people that he dealt with. We see this over and over in the things that he does with people. Brother Billy, are you trying to get in here and I'm not letting you? And to that end, do y'all remember when we covered the last half of chapter 3 in Colossians last week? We talked about the relationship between a husband and wife, the relationship between a father and a child, and the relationship between a master and a servant. How did we put all those things together in one thought? Philip said it several times. It's being a sacrifice. So that's what he's driving to. So why should Philemon take him back? We've covered a lot of this and the things that we've talked about. But, number one, Onesimus isn't the same. I'm not sending you back the same person. We would think of it this way, wouldn't we? He's put off the old man, and he's put on the new man. So, literally, it's a new man that's being sent back to Philemon. And that, Paul's saying, you should consider that, because now he's a brother in Christ. He was once unprofitable to you, but if you take him back, there's going to be a great relationship because of the common faith that exists between them. There's Colossians 2, 3, 22 through 23. How was the work of a servant described there? We talked about it last week.
As unto the Lord.
Yeah. So the labor that Onesimus, you would expect from Onesimus at this point, would be of a level that would be pleasing to the Lord. Receive him, my own heart. I have a lot of care and compassion for Onesimus, having spent this time with him. So if you receive him, it's in essence, you're receiving me. The relationship has been developed there. And then Paul says, if you don't want him, I can use him. You know, if for any reason you have it in your head that you're going to turn him down, I'm not going to take you back, well, you send him back to me because I got work for him to do. That There's a little psychology in that, right? That this guy's valuable. I'll use him. I'll put him to work. And Philemon would go, wait a minute. I get first dibs, right? And so I think Paul is making a very strong case in verse 13 to say that. And he's more than a bondservant. He's a beloved brother. Why would this request need to be honored? Well, it's fitting. It's appropriate. I don't know that anything has to be said after that. If it's the right thing to do, well, then that's what we need to be doing. So he makes that appeal in verse 8. It's not only appropriate, it's actually a good thing. There are appropriate things that are not good things. It's appropriate. It's a must do, but it's not fun. It's unpleasant, and yet it's needful. This is a good thing. Okay.
That's the only reason Paul had to be the father, because it was not because he had the authority to judge or something like that in secular matters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. The secular aspect of this. I get your point.
17-19. He's saying, you know, treat the attorney as a partner, accept him as you would me. And if I wrong you, I'll pay for it. You know. So he's even going above beyond to make sure that none of this goes wrong, goes south.
Yeah. I'll take his debt on. Because of the value that he is to me, and by implication, the kingdom. Philip.
Well, to me, Onesimus' conversion, it didn't alleviate the consequences of the fact that he was a runaway slave. Philemon could have received him back, but in a way to punish him under that legal system. But as Paul said, the best thing, the good thing to do is receive him back as a brother.
And this gets to the... Oh, I'm sorry, Brian. Did you...
No.
Oh. This gets to what Brother Jim was talking about earlier, what you were saying, the benefit of him taking Onesimus back in the way that he would take him back. It says he would receive him forever. I don't read that to mean that Onesimus would be bound by law to Philemon forever. I read that to mean that Onesimus would be bound to Philemon emotionally forever. I mean, wouldn't you? You know, if you think of the phrase a life debt, because someone saved your life, right? They did something to prevent your death. Well, don't you feel somewhat obliged to that person for their needs now because of the debt? That you feel it's an emotional debt, right?
Well, that whole discussion is preceded by the phrase "no longer as a slave."
Yeah.
So that tells us the way you're taking you back now is as a brother. And interesting, you think about the term bond servant. Well, there's now going to be a forever bond between the slaves. So I think that's
right. I do too, and that's exactly where I was headed with my thought is. Don't you feel a bond between fellow Christians all over the world? And, you know, with the support that we give to Christians, Prem Kumar, Wilson, Jaguar, they're on the other side of the world, and we have Christians in the United States that we support. Many of them have stood here and preached to us. Don't you feel a connection to these people? We pray for them. We do, rightfully so. And I think there's a spiritual bond that's going to occur because he takes him back. And Alan talked about Paul being willing to take that debt on. What did Philemon owe Paul? Exactly. So, do you think that means he pulled him out from underneath the ox cart?
I get the feeling that Paul had something to do with Philemon's conversion.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. I think Philemon owes Paul, and he owes him that debt of salvation, that he enlightened him on the ways of Christ. Now, who do we all really owe? Christ. But the person who taught us the truth, there's some sense that that person saved us. That person saved our life. David, did you have something? Yeah, sort of like that question in court that gets withdrawn. it's still in front of the jury. We've only got like a minute, and I really won't have time to get in deep into this, but I did look up the word doulos, which is the word that's in Philippians. And let me fast forward now to say that Strong says that it's a slave, involuntary or voluntary, frequently. Therefore, in qualified sense of subjection or subservancy, Thayer says it's derived by most from a root word dio, which means to tie or to bind, to ensnare, capture, serving, subject to. Number one, a slave, bondman, man of servile condition, one who gives himself up wholly to another's will, a servant or an attendant. I'm not going to take the time to read this. Look it up on the internet. This is what the translators of the English Standard Version talk about, the difficulty in translating doulos to the appropriate word. And the key statement is right here. In New Testament times, a doulos is often best described as a bondservant. I'm happy to talk with you more about it if you care to.